Kitty. What's your cat's name?
Minnie.
Minnie. Hello, Minnie. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, I really like Sidney Crosby growing up, too, because I remember one quote he said. It was like, if they're hitting me and taking me off my game, then they're doing their job and I'm not doing mine, kind of thing. So I always carried that with me, like, growing up. If somebody, like, was trying to get under my skin or something, throw me off my game, it's just like, they're doing their job and I'm not doing mine.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 31 of the Good People, Bad Intentions podcast. Today is our guest. I have Maria Clinton. Maria is an interesting story. She's somebody who's been in hockey almost all of her life, and now the last 2 years has transitioned to mixed martial arts. Just recently, July 30th, she had her third amateur MMA fight, in which she went against BJ Garceau, and that was at the New England Fights promotion, number 48, the Heat Wave. And she very quickly had got a standing guillotine against BJ Garceau. So I had done some research and had seen that she was looking at possibly going pro after her third amateur fight. So I'm really interested to have her on to talk to her. She's done two of her fights at the Fight League Atlantic. Of course, we interviewed Derek. We talked about her for a bit. So I'm really interested to get to know Maria, get to know a little bit about her story, and then, of course, kind of ask those questions as far as what is in the future for her. So without further ado, guys, here's Maria. Hello, Maria. Hello. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Hey, not too long ago, you just had your third amateur fight, and this was in New England?
Yeah.
And so this is in Maine?
Yeah.
And hey, congratulations. It looks like you had a really fast victory. I think in the first 1 minute, you had a guillotine.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't able to watch this fight. Can you kind of go over to everybody listening, like, what exactly happened in that fight?
I felt really good going into that fight. It was all stand-up. It was around the two-minute mark, I guess, when the stoppage happened. But there was a lot of cage work at the start, and then we got off the cage. And I think I threw a knee or something, and she caught it. And then I just got this mission from there, I guess.
Because I have watched quite a few of your interviews that you've done. I think you do a tremendous job, by the way. I'm really liking that you're putting yourself out there. You're doing some interviews. Glad that you're obviously coming on here. You've been pretty well established as predominantly a striker when it comes to MMA. How good did it feel to get your first submission?
It felt really good. I really didn't think it was going to be a standing guillotine, but I tried to take her down at one point. Like, I don't mind it going to the ground. It just, you know, never happened before, I guess. And my first two opponents were really good jiu-jitsu athletes. So, like, that wasn't my game plan, I guess, for the first two fights. But I really don't mind it going to the ground. I think my jiu-jitsu has gotten a lot better. So I tried in the third fight. Didn't happen, but I still got the win.
And I used to train at Titans. I'm familiar with, like, Team Henzo Gracie. I think your coach, Matt McGrath, is he not in some ways affiliated with the people at Titans? I know he's competed in ECC and Elite One and a lot of the promotions throughout the years that have been in the Maritimes. Has he ever go up to Titans or any of the gyms down here in Nova Scotia?
Yeah, he's affiliated with Titans, and we go over there. Like, I think we went my first two camps to train with the girls over there.
Oh,
so
wow.
We go over quite a bit, actually.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Did you get an opportunity when Henzo came down here? I think it was like now probably like 2 years ago. Did you get a chance to meet him? Did he go to PEI at all?
No, I didn't know. I only started this sport 2 years ago.
Okay.
So
okay. This is
fresh.
This is perfect. Perfect to bring this up. You know, everybody hates bringing it up, but COVID was the pits for a lot of people. I noticed that. And I wanted to ask you this because I know nobody really asked you this. You were heading to hockey for quite a while. Mm-hmm. You know, I seen it mentioned that you've been ever since you could walk, you could skate, and ever since you could skate, you could play hockey.
Pretty much.
But I did notice, like, I was looking at, there's a lot of information on you as an athlete from when you were in UPEI. And I noticed that in one of the articles that was written about you, you had mentioned how one of your goals was to become a coach one day in hockey. I'm just curious, when this pandemic happened and you made that switch to mixed martial arts, was there kind of a singular event or just like a moment that happened to you that made you want to do something different? Or was this just you falling in love with another sport and having to kind of put one to the side?
I guess I assistant coached my brother's team mm-hmm. after I was done playing at UPEI. Mm-hmm. But that was like kind of when I was just getting into mixed martial arts. So I kind of just fell in love with mixed martial arts. And I actually just started my own like kickboxing class, I guess.
Wow, congrats.
It's paused now because of the summer, but it's going to be going in the fall.
Yes.
So I guess kind of coach in that sense, but I just love being an athlete. I'm only 2 years into this sport, so, you know, I still have a lot to learn.
And I think it's very easy for people to forget that you're only 2 years into the sport because you're a tremendous fighter already. I kind of said this when I had Derek Clark on. Between you and Rob Logan, two of the most entertaining fighters that have come up in the Fight League Atlantic, in my opinion. You know, your first fight was just a brawl, like you were going for since the bell started. And I know that people had already commented in your previous interviews about any potential connection with hockey. And I know, I think I heard you say something along the lines of, you know, you always try to do your best in whatever sport you play in. Can you talk a little bit, though, about hockey as a sport? Because it's one of those sports where, yes, it's putting the puck on the ice and going and going through the net. But there's a lot of other elements that people don't really know about. Like, I've been talking to people that have been hockey players who've been brought onto teams just to take people out. Like, that was their job. Can you talk about that element of hockey?
I always joke about this too because everyone's like, oh, you fight now. But like when you played hockey, I was never that person to hit anybody or get into chirp in front of the net or anything like that, right? Yeah. I always stayed away from that. But like you said, like I try to do the best what I can in each sport I do. So like in hockey, I want to, you know, score the goals and be good. I didn't want to fight anybody on the ice, where now I'm a fighter, so I try to do the best I can in that. So it was always just like a joke with my family being like, Maria, where did this come from? Like, you never were like that in other sports, but yeah.
Yeah, so because I noticed one of the people that you looked up to on one of these articles, sorry that I've been scrounging, I tried to do some research before I had you on, but yeah. You mentioned Sidney Crosby as somebody that you looked up to within the sport of hockey. You know, and I'm from Yarmouth, Nova Scotia, but right now I'm in like the Coal Harbour, Dartmouth area, and he's like a living legend, whether you're here or anywhere is in Canada. But one thing that's always been part of the conversation when it comes to Sidney Crosby is the fact that a lot of times he was taken out of the game, you know, because of the kind of roughhousing that can happen within the sport. What do you think about those elements and the pureness of the sport? Do you think like those things kind of belong? Do you like that there's checking in like professional hockey and the fights that happen? Do you think that takes away from the sport? And what did you think about the sport and those things?
Yeah, I really like Sidney Crosby growing up too, because I remember one quote he said. It was like, if they're hitting me and taking me off my game, then they're doing their job and I'm not doing mine, kind of thing. So I always carried that with me, like, growing up. If somebody, like, was trying to get under my skin or something, throw me off my game, it's just, like, they're doing their job, no, I'm not doing mine. So it's just, like, kind of way to focus. And when you said Sidney Crosby, I just thought of that. But
yeah,
I think hockey, like, professional sports like that, like, especially in hockey, I guess, like, fighting, like, I think it should be allowed. I mean, mm-hmm. it's part of the game. It's always been. I don't think you can take it away.
I get these, like, I played the hockey games on, like, the Xbox or the PlayStation, and you always have those people that literally just try to start fights, like, when they're playing the game. And, like, it seems like the audience...
I remember doing that growing up.
And it seems like the audience themselves, that's what they always expect when it comes to when it comes to a hockey fight or match. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a, in my opinion, and I'm not trying to be judgmental, but it's kind of a weird sport because, you know, on one hand, like the sport itself is like with a stick and you're, you know, not slashing people and you're trying to put it inside of the net. But then there's this other element about the hockey, the sport itself, that a lot of people, I think, gravitate towards, which is the fighting side, which is maybe what some of those people that you were talking about earlier are trying to make the connection with how you're now going into mixed martial arts. You know, people, you've probably heard stories from, because you come from I imagine a place that just like in Nova Scotia, hockey's like the biggest sport. You've probably heard stories of hockey players getting in fights, and when they fight with the person, they're holding their hand or they're holding their coat like a jersey, and they're just uppercutting them. You have any stories down there where people have been hockey players getting in fights?
Oh, I've seen like bench brawls. Like I've seen a lot of fights around here. Yeah. But
so you've been playing hockey all this time, and then you made this transition. I'm really happy you did. You seem to be already, you know, making a name for yourself. But one thing that I noticed was how you mentioned that your father, you know, has been a huge part of hockey for you, you know, coaching you and everything like that, him being an accomplished hockey player himself. What has it been like that, you know, he's like, I imagine he's not a mixed martial artist or a martial artist. How has it been for your relationship now where you're in a sport where he's not necessarily an expert in, or he can't necessarily coach you in?
I think that goes back to like how they raised me, like do the best I can in whatever sport I'm in. So like, he doesn't know much about mixed martial arts, but he's been to every fight. He always, you know, asks me how I'm doing. He doesn't understand, but he always like tries to, and he's like, what's that move? What's this? And he'll watch this podcast. He watches everything. So I think, yeah, that just goes back to growing up. Dad always coached me, being like, just do the best you can. So I take that with me into my mixed martial arts career.
And have any of your friends that you've made from the many years you've played hockey, have they been following your mixed martial arts? Have they been encouraging you? What have you experienced with, you know, you making this change and how the people around you have been responding to it?
I think it's like kind of like my dad. Like, they don't really know what it is, really, but they're like, go Maria, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's where we're from too. It's not really, you know, hockey's the first sport you grow up playing, like, especially here. Like, most of the time I'm like, oh, I do mixed martial arts. And they're like, what is that? I'm like, it's like boxing, kickboxing, jiu-jitsu, everything combined. And they're like, oh, cool. So sometimes I have to explain it to people around here. But yeah, most people know what I'm doing. They just might not have watched it before, I guess.
And I wanted to ask now, you're from PEI. I'm from Nova Scotia. I think we both kind of understand that the fight scene here, fights can be a little bit scarce. I know you've mentioned that, you know, you'd like to fight at strawweight, but kind of the way the competition is right now, like, you kind of take fights whatever weight class that comes along. Totally understand that, because again, like, you know, luckily there's a lot of promotions that are now opening up after the pandemic, but during and before, it seemed like it was very scarce. Can you kind of talk us through what has been your way of acquiring fights so far? Because you've done two fights at Fight League Atlantic, and now you've done also this New England Fights promotion. Do you have a promoter? Do you kind of look with your coach at for different opportunities? How do you get these opportunities?
I guess I kind of got lucky my first two fights, because Abby was from Summerside, and then Sarah was from Nova Scotia somewhere. So I kind of got lucky there, but I've fought in like every weight class there is, I guess, like 135, 125, and now 115. And I really like 115. I felt really good at that weight, and I think that's going to be the one I'm going to continue to fight at. But yeah, there's not many girls around here that fight, so it's kind of hard to find them. Yeah.
And when you look at your three fights, because I do know that Sarah Wilson herself has a reputation of being a formidable opponent, especially when it comes to her grappling. When you look at those three fights, which has been kind of your hardest? Or it could be, because I know you're really into the mental aspect. So you know, when something's your hardest, right, it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, within those 9 minutes of fighting, but it can also be the 8 weeks of preparation and you mentally trying to get there. What is, in your opinion, been the hardest fight that you've had so far?
I'd say my first or second fight, I guess. Yep. My first fight, I didn't really know what to expect, right? So, like, I wasn't too worried about it. But then my second fight, I was like, okay, this is what I'm going into. So it kind of got me, like, more prepared for my second fight because I already knew what was going on. But, yeah, everyone, like you said, like, everyone knows that Sarah's a brown belt in jiu-jitsu and she's really good on the ground. So, obviously, that was, like, nerve-wracking for me at times. But, I don't know, I was just prepared and confident in defending myself and on the ground. So, I don't know.
And I love the Water Boys podcast that you went on. And one thing I remember you saying was that you had previously done a submission series against Sarah.
Or it was Abby.
Or sorry, Abby.
Yeah.
So Abby was your first fight, correct?
First. Yeah.
Okay. And what was Abby of the same pedigree or a different pedigree when it comes to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu?
When we fought, she was a blue belt and I was a white belt. But
so I remember you said something within that podcast that I really love, and I think it really relates to you know, mixed martial arts as a whole. You mentioned that you had done a submission series against Abby in which you had lost, correct?
Yeah.
And then, but at the same time, you knew when you took up that challenge to fight her in the cage that the whole, all of mixed martial arts, you could win that fight. And you had.
Everyone was like, you're crazy, you know? And I was like, no, I think that once everything like comes together, I'd have a fair chance. It's just like, I don't know, that submission tournament was my first tournament ever, like doing in any mixed martial arts. And it was under the FLA and we were in the cage and I was like, oh my God. And I don't know what I was doing. I probably worked off the wall like one class in my life and she held me there for like 5 minutes. I was like, I don't even know what I'm doing here. So anyways, we got a wall up after that and I've been training that ever since.
Yeah.
But yeah, once it came together, I felt confident.
Because I just thought that was very beautiful, what you had said in that interview. And I think it's beautiful that you thought that and were able to kind of pass that obstacle. Because from everything that I've been gathering, when mixed martial artists talk about the different elements of mixed martial arts, I mean, it's fair. You know, some mixed martial artists can stand their ground against boxers, against Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioners, etc., wrestlers, kickboxers. But they have to contend with a lot of different, all of the aspects when it comes to mixed martial arts, when they're trying to demonstrate those techniques, whether it's boxing, right? You know, when you pure box, you don't think about getting taken down. Don't think about getting head kicked. I mean, the perfect thought, you know, when Kamaru Usman just fought against Leon Edwards, I saw that Teddy Atlas had tweeted something along the lines of when Kamaru had pulled back, he pulled back from Leon's punches. He did everything correct in the boxing mindset, but he didn't do things in a kickboxing mixed martial arts mindset because that kick came right after, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really nice that you're able to learn that early on, because that seems to be a huge piece that a lot of people like to bring up and talk about when it comes to MMA. The fact that, you know, just because somebody can beat you at one particular rule set, can they beat you when there's no rules, basically? You know?
So yeah.
I'm glad you had that confidence.
And I found that really cool. I'm trying to be more like, everyone says, oh, I'm stand-up, but I'm trying to be more of an overall type of fighter. Like I don't know, I think my jiu-jitsu is getting better, so I'm more confident on the ground. So if my next fight is, you know, happens to go on the ground, or if I take her down, then I mean, I wouldn't mind it either way.
And I'm just curious, because I know when you go through those 8 weeks preparing for a fight, there has to be those days you feel kind of off, like, because it's like how it's really hard to be on all the time. It really is, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever have those moments in a camp where you're kind of doubting yourself and maybe, you're not sure, you know, how the fight will go. But then as it gets closer, you build up more confidence. Or can you kind of describe your confidence when you're preparing for a fight?
I think that's really to do with like the mentality of the sport, mm-hmm. which I love. Like, I love being an individual sport, but it's like still team, but like you really do have to, you know, be mentally tough in this sport. Mm-hmm. And when you said that, like leading up to a fight, I just thought of the camp leading up to Sarah's fight. The Thursday, the week before or whatever, we were doing like our rounds or whatever. And I had the worst practice of my life. Like, I was like, this is horrible. Like, I sucked. I was just like, whatever. But then I think about things my dad taught me growing up. He's like, it's this quote, it's like, flush it and move on. Like, you know what I mean? So, like,
as soon as practice was over, I'm like, was that when you're getting potty trained, or is that? No, that's awesome.
It's a joke, but like, it makes a lot of sense. Like, after the practice was done, I was like, didn't even happen. I move on, and tomorrow's a new day. So I think it's just like you're going to have ups and downs during camp. Like, it's not the easiest thing in the world, that's for sure. You just got to be like mentally tough to take on the good and the bad days.
Yeah. And I love that. That's I think it kind of relates to some of my own work right now. But it's like you might have a bad morning, right? Or you might have a bad evening, right? But it's our choice to, in some ways, it's our choice to carry that into the next part of the day, or if it's not the day, then the week, right? You know, one mm-hmm. bad experience can for some people make their whole entire week, and for some people it just makes one minute or 1 hour, right?
Yeah, and that's how I try to live my life. I try to stay very present, and if something doesn't go my way, who knows if it's a good or bad thing. Maybe that practice made me win the fight. Like, you never know what's good or bad or whatnot, so flush it and move on.
So people have kind of touched on this, and I've even DM'd you about this, but I really find it interesting because I know you look up to Rose. I know you went from long hair to short hair. I know that from my understanding, it really helps when you're rolling on a regular basis because hair can get in the way and whatnot. But how much of this was also a mental show of how determined you are within the sport and how willing you're to go by cutting your hair shorter so you can get to these practices and not have to worry about, because I know for a lot of women, women can identify when it comes to their hair, right? So for you to have cut your hair, I mean, if it was a guy to cut their hair, I mean, it'd be another Tuesday, right? But for some women, especially when they've had longer hair, it's a huge significant thing. So can you kind of talk about your mindset there, and has it been a show of how serious you are of this sport?
I think it was like a whole bunch of things combined, but yeah, I just hated it. It was always in the way when I was rolling and stuff like that. So I knew I was going to take this sport seriously, like when I got into it and I got going. So I was like, honestly, I'm cutting it off. And I don't really care. Like you say, like they identify with your hair and stuff like that. Like if people don't like the way I look, then that's on them. Like true. I literally don't care. So yeah, I cut my hair off, but just because like I practice every day and it was just always in the way and it was annoying. And I was like, I don't think I'd look too horrible with short hair. So then got to cut.
And
I love it. I'll never
I love it too. I think it's a good look for you.
Thanks.
You know, going back to being a woman in this sport, you know, I'm just curious because from everybody that I'm a man, though I can't really 100% understand, but from my understanding, it can be very vicious being a woman. Women can be very hard on themselves as well as hard on other women. What has your experience been like when you joined this sport? Has it given you more confidence in yourself and who you are as a person? Has sports in general, even with hockey, have that accomplished that? Or, you know, how have you been able to be so confident to go and do these things in the front of everybody else?
I don't know. I think that's just how I was raised too. I was talking to my mom the other day, and I'm just like, just based on like my looks and stuff like that, like the way she raised me too, it was just like, if you're gonna do something, do it. Even like if you're a woman or not, like she's like such a strong woman, and I always looked up to her. So it doesn't really, I don't know, maybe like I just do these things because I like it and it doesn't matter my gender. Mm-hmm. And if people don't like it, then they don't like it. And I've always like all the girls I've met through this sport are like the best people ever. I've never met like someone bad. So we'll see. I don't know. I love it.
So I wanted to ask this regarding your last fight. You went against BJ Garceau. I looked into her and a little bit of her story. She has went through quite a few battles. Did you know that she, you know, was a type 1 diabetic and had a lot of hardships in her life that she's used the sport to overcome? Did you have a conversation with her after or before the fight regarding these things?
I didn't have a conversation with her about those things, no. But I think I knew that she was going through that stuff. And I think it's cool that she uses mixed martial arts as a way of escaping those things, you know? And I think she's having her last fight in September, think. Then she's, like, retiring. But, yeah, that's really cool. And you can just see how, like, sports in general can help your mental health.
And have you had any, like, when you were, you mentioned how you had kind of a struggle at the beginning of the fight. People often say that as you get older, you become stronger. Were you able to feel some of the strength because of her being a little bit older than you? Or
yeah, I was joking with people. Everyone says, oh, dad strength, right? I was like, she's going to have some mom strength. Like, you know, I was like, gosh, I don't know. But she was pretty strong and she had good head positioning on the cage and stuff. But I don't know. I felt strong at that weight class too. So
yeah, because when I saw you fighting her, I was thinking her first name is BJ, like a BJJ. So I'm like, this might be an interesting contest when it comes to the ground game. But I'm really glad that again you were able to get that standing guillotine. You know, put a notch in the belt. You know, feel more comfortable when it comes to that aspect of mixed martial arts.
Yeah, me and my coach were talking about just like finishes, right? Like I wanted to get the finish so bad. Like my first two fights, it was more just like throw me in, I'm gonna do my best, I don't know what's going on. And then my third one, I'm like, you know, if I want to turn pro, like I want to get a finish, you know, just to solidify the win. And we were talking about that the whole camp. It was like every time I did rounds or anything, Matt would be like, look for the finish, get finishes, keep go for them everywhere. So in the fight, I was just like constantly being like, how can I end it, how, you know what I mean? And then I got the guillotine, and I was really excited about that.
Yeah, that's amazing. And speaking about your fights, I know you've kind of talked about the fact that you wanted to go at 3-0 and then as an amateur, and then possibly go to pro. Are you considering staying within the amateur rankings, or are you looking? Is your next move to go pro, or have you put much thought into that part yet?
Yeah, I think my next fight will be pro. I'm not sure. I'm thinking like November, but again, opponents are slim, so just kind of got to wait and see.
And hey, I'm really excited for you because I do realize that you do go to school for mental health counseling, if I'm not mistaken. Is it master's?
Yeah, master's in counseling psychology.
Yeah. And is that something that you're in say September that you're going to be continuing studying as well?
Yeah.
Okay. And
but it's online. I don't actually go to class.
Really? Okay, that's an interesting topic. What do you think about the
because
online?
Because I'm so focused on mixed martial arts too. I'm crazy. I'm like, I don't want to move away. I love Matt's gym, you know. I love PEI. So, I was like, what can I do like online? And I was looking into counseling anyways, but I was looking into like Acadia and stuff. And but yeah, so I found Yorkville University, and it's an online program. Mm-hmm. So I took that, and I have another like 2 years of that, and I'm just gonna train while doing it.
Wow, well, and that's amazing that you're able to find a way to make it all work out and still keep focus on what you're most interested in. Do you see yourself specializing with working with athletes? Do you want to keep with more like general kind of patients or counseling patients?
Yeah, I was thinking about that when I first started it. I was like, it'd be cool to work with like athletes or like teams of some sort. But now that I'm into the program a little bit, like I wouldn't mind working with anybody, but we'll see.
And are you learning? Like, because of course, mental health so important. 2022, guys, if you don't think mental health is important, time to get on the wagon, right? But mental health is becoming a huge part of the sport as well. You know, I kind of chuckled a little bit because on Ariel's show, I forget the fighter that was talking, but they had four counselors. They've had they have a sports counselor, they have a trauma counselor, they also have like a general purpose counselor, and I forget the fourth one. But people are doubling, tripling up. Oh, hello, goodness. Kitty. What's your cat's name?
Minnie.
Hello, Minnie. Welcome to the podcast.
She got in.
But people are doubling, tripling up on counselors and specialists, and it seems very much like it's a part of everybody's camp now. You know, it seemed not too long ago, you have a nutritionist, you have maybe a strength and condition coach, you have, you know, your Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, your striking, your head coach, etc. But now it seems like more and more mental health coaching is becoming a part of the sport and part of the camp. Have you been able to, in your learning, find actual things that you've learned and being able to apply it in your own personal life or within your sport?
I haven't been into the program too long yet, so I don't know about that, but I do, like, just always growing up too, I've always been, like, so mental side of sports. Mm-hmm. Like, I love the mental side of it. Like, I would play hockey, and before the game even started, I would go through literally in my mind the whole game. Like, if I was here, what would I do? I could do this or that. Or, like, now in fighting, I think of the fight and I can, like, visualize myself winning or visualize myself doing certain things. And I think that's a big part of mixed martial arts too, because visualization and the mental side of the sport is huge. Like, if you're down on yourself or you feel bad about, like, you're not going to perform well. You have to be ready, like, mentally and physically, in my opinion.
What has it been like being part of a sport before, like hockey? Many games, series of games going on, and then all of a sudden you have something like mixed martial arts where, you know, competition could be scarce, and when you compete, you put 8 weeks in, you put your heart and soul in it. What's it been like, you know, not really having those reps like you have in hockey when it comes to the game itself and having those regular competitions? Like, do you wish mixed martial arts was something that you could every week or every 2 weeks have, or you like having that rest in between?
Yeah, this was another thing too. When I switched over, it was like kind of different. Like, you have to, like, go to practice every day knowing that, like, this in the long run will help you. And, like, mixed martial arts wise, like, you don't have a game or a fight every weekend, but you just got to know that the work you're doing now will help you in the future. So that's what I kind of always keep in mind.
And I wanted to take a little side spin, okay, away from mixed martial arts, away from hockey, and talking about the beautiful island of Prince Edward Island. You're in a part that, you know, people from here all the time, they go there on vacation, right? They love the spot, love the history. What's it been like growing up in PEI? You know, can you kind of give us a little taster of what it's like to be in PEI?
PEI is great. I think it's just growing up in PEI, like, especially where I'm from, like, Surrey, mm-hmm. PEI, it was so, like, small town. Mm-hmm. And I actually really liked that growing up, like, everyone knows everyone kind of thing. And I moved away for a little bit, you know, I explored the world, and I really like living in a small community just because everyone knows everybody. And, like, if you're doing something, everyone gets behind you on it, or you just know what everyone's up to, and you're there for each other as a community. But all of PEI is beautiful, and the beaches are awesome. Like, summers here are great. So I love living here.
And I wanted to also ask you, when it comes to living on the island, and I'm not trying to get really too poetic or whatnot, but from my understanding, there is a bridge obviously connecting with the rest of the country, but in many ways it's kind of isolated from the rest of the country. Have you ever looked at, you know, parts of living in PEI and associated it with your own identity? Have you been able to talk with people and realize, oh, that's just a PEI thing about me? Or
I don't know. Living in PEI, it was great during COVID too, because, you know, nobody could get in and out. So we're literally, when things were shutting down and stuff, we were still going over here. So that was a plus. Yes. Being isolated. But
I was one of those people looking at the PEI numbers and kind of like, oh man, like, you know, because you guys were, I think for a while you guys were pretty good, right? You were probably able to still do most of your regular stuff for quite a while.
Yeah, that was one thing too. I started mixed martial arts at the start of COVID. So things were like kind of shutting down, reopening and all that stuff. And I remember seeing like other gyms were closed for like months, and like us in PEI, we could still do stuff. So that was nice.
Yes. I'm really glad. Fingers crossed things are going well. And it's kind of funny. Going back to this thing, if COVID didn't happen, do you think you would have still been playing hockey? Like, what do you, like, have you ever thought about that?
I don't know. It's crazy because, like, I always think, like, you'll never know if something's good or bad.
True.
Like, then I thought it was the end of the world. Oh, COVID, I'm done with hockey. What am I going to do? But now I'm like, best thing that could ever happen to me. I love mixed martial arts. So, I don't know.
And looking to the future, right? Of course, was mentioned in the Brilliant Water Boys podcast, but I did want to bring it up. Ben Chase, whom you've taken the first Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu classes with, if I'm not mistaken,
yeah,
this is my cousin. Now, yeah. is he doing the music thing? Is he?
Oh yeah, he lives in Nashville now.
Yes. You ever go to any of his concerts when he was he?
I was just at one recently. He was actually playing in New Brunswick. Oh. So I went over to watch that. Haven't been down to Nashville yet, but we've always been talking about it. I think I might make a trip to visit sometime, but
That's interesting, because you both kind of have in your own right a performing art that you're working on. I mean, you know, we like to think of mixed martial arts or martial arts as an individual thing. But certainly those lights, it's about what you can do under the lights a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Same with Ben and his music. Is it more of like a country kind of sound going for him?
Yeah, he's on like Apple Music and stuff. Ben Chase.
Okay, I'm gonna check him out.
Writes his own songs and stuff. Yeah.
So he had the Instagram video with Dana White. Not that many people can get a shout out from Dana White this early into their career. You're big on visualization, as I can hear. I remember you were mentioning about the book, The Secret. I believe was it your mom that had got that for you?
Yeah, she showed that to me. Yeah.
What was it like when Dana White's cheering you on? Like, was that a big motivator? Was that kind of you able to make some connections in your own mind about what your future is going to look like?
It was really cool. I remember Ben sent me a Snapchat and he was like, I'm in line waiting to go see Dana White and like the Nelk boys. And I'm like, oh, that's sick or whatever. Like, make sure you get a picture with him. And then like 2 hours later, he messages me that video and I'm like, holy, like I was like freaking out. Like, obviously Dana, he's probably like, oh, Maria, like he doesn't know me or nothing, but even him just saying my name, I was like, that's so cool.
Hey, you know what? He's probably the next looking for a fight. I'm calling it right now. One of the looking for a fights. He's coming to the place that you're going to be doing your pro fights at. I'm calling it out there. That's what I see. But no, that must have been like, I'm just thinking about myself. If I were in that situation, I'd be like, wow, like, you know, now I can actually, because this is kind of a weird thing, but I've always felt like when I'm in Nova Scotia or whatever, I feel like I don't have a huge connection with the world. You know, it seems like if you're in the States, you know, if you're in bigger cities, you feel like you get more of the concerts with all the bands that you like, and you don't really feel like you have a huge connection to like you don't go to a restaurant, DJ Khaled's there, you know, if you're in Nova Scotia, right? Or PEI. But were you able to, was there ever a moment in your 2 years in mixed martial arts where you kind of realized that the fight world's smaller than we actually think. Have you ever had any of those moments yet? Because, you know, I think when we watch a sport, we automatically think, oh my gosh, like this is the biggest thing ever, because there's so many people watching the sport. But when you actually get into it, I mean, there's only X amount of fighters. Have you ever had those kind of moments?
I guess so. Just like realizing, like, opponents wise, I'm like, oh, it'd be easy, just find me anybody at this weight. And it's like, there's not many around to find. Or like some of my teammates, like their fights get canceled and they're trying to find like a rematch or like an opponent to step in and they can't. And like in my head, I'm like, there should be so many, like, where's all the fighters at? But it is really small, like, community, I guess, too. And maybe that's why I love it so much, because I'm from Surrey PEI, and then mixed martial arts, it's like a family.
And you mentioned your teammates, and this is a question I have about the mental aspect. I mean, sometimes you're the hammer and sometimes you're the nail in the sport, especially when you're training with people. And I believe that the training is probably the most mental aspect of the sport. I mean, yeah, you have the nerves in the fight, but the training seems to be like, you know, facing your own demons and everything like that. And not blowing your cover when you're getting hurt in training, because it's really hard. Do you have like a main training partner throughout these 2 years that you've mainly been paired up with, or do you switch it up most of the time? Or
there's another girl in my gym that does mixed martial arts. Her name's Ariel. Okay. And she's always been there. You know, she's a good friend of mine now, so she always spars with me. But then it's just pretty much like, who else is my size? It's hard to find. Yes. But usually going against bigger people in the gym, but I think that's why it helps me in my fights, mm-hmm. too.
And look into the future. You want to go to strawweight, you were mentioning, and that the strawweight division, I'm going to throw it out there, is the most interesting division in the UFC for females.
Yeah, I think so too. I love the strawweight division.
The scary thing is it's kind of like a Game of Thrones, because, you know, it's like every time there's a new queen, there's another one that comes up, right? And I'm just curious, have you seen in your mind where some fights that you would think would be interesting in the future, some matchups that you think you'd have, or do you kind of just want to get on the scene when you get on and try to climb the rankings?
Yeah, well, I don't know who will be around if I ever make it there, so I've never thought about that, yes. Like matchmaking myself with anybody. But like, I've obviously like visualized myself like going as far as I can in the sport, and I think like which most people do, right? And yeah, we'll see.
Because I think it was Mike Tyson is a perfect example of this. You know, he's getting trained by his trainer and mentor, Customato, and they're going through tape. He has like Customato at the time had like the most, the biggest collection of boxing fights at the time. And they were looking at all the previous champions, and he was only like 16 or 17 years old at the time. They're looking at all the previous champions and creating and devising ways to beat them at that time. And I don't know if anybody in this modern era ever like has that kind of experience, but I'm just curious, like if you watch UFC fights and you're like, you know, I think I can match up really well with this particular person, or, you know, I could see myself in the octagon with this person. Do you ever get those moments, or is it too early to tell when it comes to that? Cause I know everybody wants to see you get to that level, but we keep forgetting that you're only 2 years in, right? Like you still,
that's what I feel too. Like you're saying this and I'm like, well, I still have a lot to learn. Like, I don't think I could beat anybody in the UFC right now, but like, I definitely look up to a lot of people in the UFC. Like I want to be there someday, but yeah.
Have you been following women's boxing in the sense that I believe that the UFC and mixed martial arts has been pretty ahead when it comes to having really entertaining fights for women and having like, you know, amount of competition increasing. But it seems like now with boxing, it's kind of followed suit. Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano, you got Clarissa Shields, and she's going against Savannah Marshall. This is in September, I believe. Have you been kind of following the scene? Because I know you're a striker. Have you been following the scene in boxing, and have you been kind of any female boxers that you also like, or you mostly stick with MMA?
Yeah, I don't really watch too much boxing, honestly, but I remember just because Jake Paul and all that thing with Cerrone and Katie Taylor. I like Katie Taylor, but I don't really watch boxing very much. But yeah.
And I like asking this because we're, how old are you again?
24.
So me and you were about the same age as Jake Paul. And Jake Paul is a boxer that's fighting mixed martial arts, basically. You know, and he's doing it in his own way, his own clever way. How have you been able to gauge what he's been doing with the sport of boxing and fighting against mixed martial arts? Do you think it's a circus? Do you give him credit for what he's doing, or how do you assess that? Because he's around the same age.
I'm kind of like 50-50.
Okay.
I think, well, just because he was kind of like famous, he was on YouTube and stuff like that beforehand, that obviously his following is going to do like follow along with whatever he's doing next. So the way he like promotes fights and stuff is obviously good. He gets a lot of people to watch. And the fact that he promotes Amanda Serrano and women's boxing too is great. But yeah, some things he says I don't agree with, but some things he does I do. So I don't know.
The hype squad, dancing. He does some pretty interesting dancing in his open workouts. Like he's pretty well coordinated, and you know, it's kind of funny because people are like, sometimes they're like, "Hey, you look like Jake Paul." I'm like, don't say that, man. I don't want to be. But then the more I've been looking into him, I'd be interested to have a conversation and really kind of get to know him a little bit, because it seems like there's a little bit more than what's on the surface when it comes to that guy, especially with what he's been through.
Oh, yeah.
So we're getting close to time there, Maria. Was there anything on the top of your mind you wanna talk about or put on the air? I guess what you said, maybe October you're looking at possible some possible fights.
Yeah, November.
October, November for a pro debut.
Yep.
And do you think there's going to be anything different when you go into the pro ranks as far as what you've been doing right now? I mean, I think there are some, I don't know about in the PEI's rule sets. I don't know if they have a does PEI have a commission?
No.
The commission here for amateur MMA is a little different, I think, because you from my understanding, you can't
elbow
to the head
or knee, strikes on the ground. But my third match that I just had, my third fight, we were allowed to punch to the head on the ground. I think that's like a state's thing, but I'm not sure.
Okay, this is actually this is beautiful. Okay, because I thought about this yesterday. I was doing my research, and I just thought about it now. There's a couple different camps, quote, so to speak, of because it's such a new sport. There are some people that I know who went straight to pro, and there was no amateur MMA at the time, and they've kind of learned on the job. And I feel with you kind of represent more of the newer generation of mixed martial arts, where there is that amateur element, kind of similar to what boxing does with amateur boxing and then pro boxing. Have you been able to kind of have those conversations with those veterans who've not had this amateur experience? Like, what has generally been the opinion? Like, are people grateful that we now have this amateur mixed martial arts brackets?
I think it's really good that there's amateur, because you don't have to get thrown in to something that you're like unfamiliar with. Like, I'm very glad that there was, like, I got my three amateur fights in, you know. I kind of, there was no punching in the head on the ground, and you can just kind of learn more and not be as intimidated. But I am excited to go into pro rules, because elbows and knees to the head and stuff like that, I'm excited to switch it up with the striking.
Are these things that you've done in practice but never been able to use in the competition, or do they take away, when you're in a camp, do they take away those elements because they know you have a different rule set?
In our gym, whether you're in amateur, we do pro rules when you spar, because of the fact that you're only going to have like three amateur fights realistically if you do, and then you go pro, and you know, you want to learn how to strike on the ground, how to properly like do the pro rules. So that's, we just always done pro rules, hitting to the head and stuff like that on the ground in our gym. So I think I'll be ready for that when come time.
And it sucks because I've seen so many times people have a good position in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And then in MMA, it's like one of the worst positions you could possibly be in for ground and pound. Mm-hmm. And have you also seen combat jiu-jitsu, I believe is what it's called, the Brazilian jiu-jitsu where you can actually have strikes as well to be more realistic? Have you seen any of these?
I've seen a little bit of that, yeah.
Yeah, so it's crazy.
Makes more sense, but it's different.
Yeah, I feel like right now we're in this moment where people are still experimenting with what type of what kind of sports we can build up from just mix, you know, offshoots of mixed martial arts and other combat mm-hmm. sports, and you know, like bare knuckle FC and a few other things.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd ever do bare
yes,
knuckle
yes,
fighting.
Yes, yes, yes. I think. Yeah. I'm not, for whatever reason, I'm not really into it. I don't know why. I know it has actually probably a stronger history than boxing itself, but yeah, it's just, I think it's the cuts. It's the cuts for me. It's just,
yeah, like you just get punched once in your face, like so many stitches and stuff, like not
yeah,
worth
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then yeah. Like another thing is like, and maybe you can understand this, but like with boxing, people often don't appreciate fighters that are more counter fighters or that have to make some distance to then be able to do something with it. Because people say all the time, oh, so-and-so is running or this or that. And I mean, there definitely are cases where people run in fights. But there is an art in to having that space when it comes to boxing. And then you have a sport like BKFC where they remove that space that you can build for counters, so you have to literally just go forward and like take punches and
really
yeah like it's I think there's some rules as far as to what extent, but I believe they have criteria where at a certain point they have to keep pushing forward in the match. That's why it's like a guaranteed entertainment. Because they can't really, they're kind of like have to stay within this certain circle, I believe. It's kind of like sumo wrestling, but like bare knuckle. You know, you got to stay within that ring or whatever. But yeah, so you don't like it either. That's okay. We got something in common there.
Yeah.
But hey, Maria, I just want to say a huge thank you for coming on this podcast because. You know, you were really, really easy to book. Easiest person to ever book for this podcast. So I really appreciate that you're, you know, putting yourself out there and coming on podcasts. Again, you're one of my favorite fighters in this area. I'm really looking forward to seeing you climb those pro ranks and see, you know, what comes of it. I think you have a bright future in the sport. I think one thing that people are going to like, when you make that switch to pro, they're going to like the entertainment you bring into the octagon. You're not going to be a boring fighter. You know, if I was having a conversation with, another person that was in mixed martial arts, that was a boring fighter. I mean, unfortunately, boring fighters, they don't really sell pay-per-views. They don't really seem to get a lot of opportunities. The sport seems to always like those that take risks and are risk takers, much like business itself.
I was thinking about that too. I think it's just my style of fighting. Like I don't try to be entertaining and stuff like that, but just the way I like to stand up and strike and stuff like that, I think most people like to watch that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's just my style.
Yeah. And that's amazing because already you're having entertaining fights and you're still learning, right? So imagine when you have those matchups in the future where you have people that, you know, there'll be a great contest and you'll have a even more entertaining fights. Yeah. So we're obviously going to be following and seeing when you have your announcements. I know we're kind of trying to push some questions and see where things are right now, but I know that things are a little in the air and I totally respect that. The best thing I want to say right now is I wish you the best of luck for your return to school in the September.
Thank you.
That's really awesome that you have these two passions, that are, you know, it's funny, mixed martial arts is a huge part, the mental aspect. And I love how you also are learning about mental health and support and counseling.
Thank you. Well, thanks for having me. Thank you for inviting me on. It was a great
chat. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and take care.
You too.
And guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast. I certainly had a good time talking with Maria. I think she represents the Maritimes as well as PEI really well. And I'm really excited to see what's next for her as far as her pro debut. As she said, she's looking at possibly in November making an announcement as far as what fight she'll have next. And if anybody has not watched any of her fights, I strongly recommend looking her up on YouTube. I know two of her Fight League Atlantic fights have been posted, as well as if you're on her Instagram, she had a highlight with that most recent standing guillotine against BJ Garceau. So, she's a very entertaining fighter. As you heard from her, she doesn't intentionally want to entertain, but yeah, she's got a really great stand-up style, and now she can submit girls. So it's going to be a really interesting career to follow and to keep an eye out. And I love some of the connections that we're able to make with hockey, because a lot of people in Canada, you know, are really big into hockey and can kind of relate to a lot of the stuff that she was talking about. And we were talking about. And as always, if you like this podcast on whatever podcasting platform you're listening to it, I strongly recommend that you subscribe to it. That way, when a new episode comes out, you won't miss it. Also, if you could leave a rating as far as how you like the podcast so far, that really goes well with us. And then, if you're watching it on YouTube, could you like, comment, and share? And then if you're looking for updates as far as the podcast, the platform I use the most is Instagram to put posts on when new episodes are coming out, etc. Of course, now, guys, we're trying to keep a Sunday schedule. So new episodes coming out on Sunday at 5 p.m. Atlantic Standard Time. For anybody that's international, that's GMT minus 4. And guys, whatever time you're listening to this episode, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you got something out of it. And I look forward to seeing you guys next time. Peace. Take care.